Blog Talk Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمد رسول الله The brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Thank you for joining us this evening for Wealth Creation and Preservation. Alhamdulillah, today we're going to step out into some new territory that hasn't been covered. And the idea is not to cover it, but begin the exposure to spark the idea, the interest, the awareness, to open our eyes about some things that we may not be paying attention to, yours truly included. And it's the issue of blacks and taxation, quote unquote. You know how we use that term, blacks. Now flip it, Bilalians and taxation. However, we all have our little stories about, you know, athletes and celebrities and those who get rich and flash bang, they're suddenly broke. And a lot of it, especially as it relates to celebrities and athletes, is the taxation. That's on the larger picture. But what this is going to be addressing is the systemic aspect of taxation and how it affects, even creates, the wealth gap between the races. In this case, the focus is between Bilalians and Caucasians. Well, I've stumbled upon a new book, and it may not be new. This clip is actually from June 2021, which seems like maybe that was about the time it came out, maybe 9 months, 8 months or so ago. And it is Professor Dorothy Brown, and she has written the publication, The Whiteness of Wealth. And perhaps I'll mention later when my piece comes up a little more about there's some other books where it's deep dives have been done on the banking system and other aspects of it that continue to point the finger at the fundamental role that, quote-unquote, racism, but we know in the tone of Isabel Wilkerson, the caste system, how fixed it is and how potent and influential it is on the conditions whereby they seem to be insurmountable and insoluble, because in the very fabric of the nature of this culture, which is that is unseen but everywhere, imposes and sustains these inequitable positions. But enough about that for me right now. We'll come back to that. We're going to be listening to about 15 minutes of a piece. It is published on YouTube by the Economic Policy Institute, and it is The Whiteness of Wealth, Dorothy Brown, on the State of Working America podcast. So you can look it up to hear the rest of it. We're going to hear about half of it, inshallah. Thank you, brothers and sisters. And after that, of course, my co-host, Kamila Mahasin, Bilali, and Shuai will come on, and then my contribution. Thank you again. God's peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dorothy, welcome to the State of Working America podcast. We're so happy to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let me tell you, I never thought I'd curl up with a book at night on the tax code. But I just found it fascinating. It made me think in a way, you know, I never ever thought that our tax system could be skewed against a certain group of individuals. And that's, you know, what you bring out here in the book. So the tax policies, you're saying the tax policies are biased against black workers, black families. and you looked at black individuals and compared them to white specifically. You're not looking, you didn't look at other groups, right?
In this book, no. In this book, it's basic, it's black and white because the racial wealth gap is the greatest when you compare black Americans and white Americans. So that's the focus of the book.
Right. So why don't you go over a little bit of the overarching findings that you, you know, and what's surprising to you, it seems, from the book.
Yes. Yeah, so I first want to start with something you just said, Eve. And basically it was that you never really thought about tax policy having a racially disparate impact. And quite honestly, there was no reason for you to think it because the IRS never published statistics on race. So there was never a connection when we talk about tax statistics about race. And in fact, I went into tax law because I knew it had nothing to do with race. Growing up in the South Bronx, dealing with racism on a regular basis, I didn't want to take a job that required me to deal with racism in the substance of the law. I knew I wanted to be a lawyer, and I majored in accounting in college and took a tax accounting course and said, that's it. It's just numbers. The only color that matters is green. And I want to be a tax lawyer. And as I say in the book, I've never been more wrong about anything in my life. And how is it that I stumbled onto this? Well, it started years before I figured it out when I was doing my parents' tax returns. So I'm doing their tax returns. I'm doing my tax returns. My mother was a nurse. My father was a plumber. They earned roughly equal amounts. Some years, my mother would make more than my father by like a couple hundred dollars. Other years, my father would make more than my mother, depending on how much overtime he made. And I earned by myself what they earned combined. And under our progressive tax system, that should have meant I would be paying a whole lot more in taxes. I was paying more, but not a whole lot more. And every year that I did their tax returns, I left thinking I'm missing something. I don't understand. This is the right answer, but I don't understand why. Fast forward, I become a law professor. One day I read an article, and the article says, how do you know there isn't a race and tax problem if you don't look? And I went, what? Race and tax? And it was written by someone who was a mentor and who always made me think. So I picked up the phone and I called him and I said, I'm going to do something. That's when I realized the IRS does not publish statistics by race. So how am I ever going to do something?
I couldn't believe that. You know, at EPI, we're all about data and statistics.
Data, right?
How could that be? And I mean, that could be a whole other discussion. But you realize, so you can't even gauge what's going
yes.
on because they're not publishing the data.
Yes, because there is this myth that tax law is colorblind. There's this myth that there might be a class differential, right? Because we have a progressive tax rate. The higher your income, the higher your tax rate. Although that's not true because high-income Americans have a lot of income from stock that is taxed at a separate rate, not even in the progressive tax system, and it's at a low rate. So, but there's this myth of colorblindness. So
and you point out, too, in investing that when you compare blacks and whites, that whites are investing more in the stock market, so that creates that inequity there.
Absolutely. It's everywhere. And what the research shows is even wealthy black Americans don't have the percentage of stock ownership that their white peers have. So race is throughout the impact of the code, but it's ignored in the Treasury published statistics. So what did I do? Well, once I figured out this is going to be a lot harder promise to keep, I then started reading everything I could get my hands on that talked about race, and I applied my tax eyes to them. And shortly after I made the promise to write about this, I came across a commission on the status of black women. And in the report, it said black wives contribute roughly 41% to household income, and white wives contribute 29%. So to anybody else reading that, they're like, yeah, okay, fine. But to me, it was tax gold, because that was the beginning of my unraveling why my parents paid so much in taxes. What that 4129 breakout tells me is I know there's this thing called the joint return, and I know that when some people get married, they get a tax cut, and when other people get married, their taxes go up. If you contribute income to households roughly 50-50 like my parents, you don't get a tax cut. I'm sorry, you don't get a tax cut. You pay higher taxes. If you contribute like 100% zero or 79-21, something less than 20%, you get a tax cut. So what does that tell us? In and of itself, nothing. What I needed was Census Bureau data to confirm what that statistic hinted at, which is namely when Black Americans get married, they are more likely to be in the 50-50 wage earner household that doesn't get a tax cut. And when white Americans are more likely to be married, they are more likely to be in the 100, 0, or 90-10 household. Mm-hmm. And they get a tax cut when they get married. That's why my parents are paying so much in taxes, because they were married to each other and contributing roughly equal amounts to household income.
I love how you weaved your family through it, your parents through it. It really just made it a great read. But you actually go back in time and show that this was set up many moons ago by a white guy who found a way, you know, to influence and change the tax system. His wife didn't work, so he
yes.
ended up with a tax break. That was fascinating. Can you explain that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's Henry and Charlotte Seaborn.
Right.
And back in the 1920s, basically at the beginning of our progressive tax system in 1913, the only people who paid taxes were the really rich. When I tell this to my students, they're like, what? Are you? Well, that's crazy, right? No, the only people who paid taxes were the highest income Americans. One of them were Henry and Charlotte Seaborn, and they didn't like it. He made all the money. She was a stay-at-home spouse. We had individual filing, so he was filing a tax return and paying taxes on all of his income. But he and his lawyers came up with an idea. If he could shift half of his income to Charlotte, then the tax rate that applied to his last dollar would be significantly lower than if he was taxed on all of it. So that's what they did. They filled out what I would say is a fraudulent tax return. They put half the income on his, half the income on hers, and they got a reduced tax bill. But the IRS said, no, you can't do that. There's no such thing as what you just did. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court sided with the Seaborns. The reason why the Supreme Court sided with the Seaborns is they lived in a community property state. And in a community property state, each spouse has a legal right to half of what the other spouse has. So the Supreme Court says she basically has half. So, yeah, you could tax her on half. The problem is every rich white American who didn't live in a community property state paid higher taxes, and they didn't like that and ultimately got Congress to change the law to make a joint return possible so that no matter where you lived, if you were rich and a single wage earner, you got a tax cut when you got married.
So forward fast to today, and recently things have shifted a little bit, but that creates an inequity because you have what you were saying, like your parents, James and Dottie, who had
yes.
Who made about the same amount of money. So
yes.
they ended up with a penalty.
That's right. And like you said, things have changed. The 2017 Tax Act has minimized the married couples that pay a tax penalty. However, the 2017 Tax Act ignored the significant marriage penalties in the earned income tax credit and ignored the significant marriage tax penalties at high income levels. Why is that? So at high income levels, most white married couples are in single wage earner households and get a tax cut. But at high income levels, married black couples are still more likely to pay higher taxes than if they remained single or lived together unmarried. So at these high income black households where you would think you would see more wealth production, tax law penalizes them.
So now there are a few specific things you point to that are skewed against a black family. So there's the marriage penalty we talked about, no deductions for rent, limited
right.
tax breaks for for-profit colleges. There's a whole story there.
Yes.
Retirement account, early withdrawal penalties, among other things.
Yes.
Is there one you think impacts black people, black workers hardest and their wealth?
When I think about the impact on black workers, I think about health insurance and retirement accounts that are received tax-free, but because of occupational segregation in the labor market, black Americans are less likely to have access to the jobs that come with those tax-free benefits. So I look at the racism in the labor market and how tax law comes on top of that and makes it even harder for black workers to get tax benefits.
Got it. So all tax policies are inherently designed to incentivize some activities, de-incentivize others. What do you say to folks who might be skeptical that race is a motivating factor in some of these policies?
That it should, well, we know that the law says it is illegal to discriminate on the basis of race. And even though Congress may not have a sentence in the legislative history that says we want blacks to pay more, if in fact, black Americans are paying higher taxes than their white peers, we should all see that as unfair, and we should all work to change it. So it's simply inequitable to suggest that black Americans should pay higher taxes because we are the victims of systemic racism, and we bring that onto our tax returns.
Right. And as you say, we don't know exactly how blacks are impacted because we don't have the data. How would it help us to have that data?
So it would help us tremendously because what I've been able to show in my book would be easily replicated with tax return data. So we would see that black Americans pay higher taxes. We would see, we would have a connection in the minds of the American public that taxes and race go together. Right now, the refusal of Treasury to publish statistics by race reinforces the narrative that there are no racial disparities. There's not really a problem. And if there is a problem, it's no big deal because, you know, everybody loses under the tax system. But it's simply not true. Everybody doesn't lose under the tax system because of their race, but black Americans do.
Such a struggle trying to climb the ladder of success. Living in a world where every day my strength is put to the test. But I face that test with courage, and I just won't be discouraged. I'm determined, you see, to reach my
possibility.
Now I've run across so many things that could block me, but I made up my mind. Much more than I can see, and so much that I can become. That's why I'm reaching for the sun.
I see my possibility. Just woke up and found him here in me.
الحمد لله رب العالمين وبسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah. How are you doing?
Alhamdulillah, I'm good. How are you?
I am great. I need to get things straight. Okay. All right. Yeah.
You all good?
Yeah, we all good. I know I had. We're gonna go a little longer than the bottom of the hour, just a little longer, because I know there's some ideas that I need to complete in terms of that. Okay. That's just for FYI for others, because you're going to start hearing a signal at the hour, 90 seconds, 60 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever. We're gonna keep it rolling, and I'm going to help out by stepping out the way while telling you how you're shining and you're looking beautiful and you're looking golden, you know what I'm saying? You got that gold blasting up out of that hair, like it's like I got light for y'all tonight. Alhamdulillah. Well, I'm gonna let you go ahead and give it up. Now. It's on you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi r-Rahmani r-Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan rasulullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. To all of our listeners and those who are chiming in, we have made it here to another month, a new month. We are here in December. The countdown into what is now the American calendar of coming into the new year, and we are taking inventory, right? So I want to congratulate those that have been consistent in their seeking of a clear understanding. Those students who have pushed through, you know, the self-denial of whether they can or can't learn something new, or really hold fast to the knowledge as it comes across it, and using the knowledge that they learned when those pressured moments, those stressed moments show up in life, because as we gain knowledge, there will always be opportunities for us to practice this way of life, and ways for us to see if we really understood the lesson that was given to us. So I want to congratulate you for continuing on that journey. When I tapped in with my dad this morning, what was on my mind was I've been thinking a lot about this concept and this idea of legacy, this idea of the, the exchange of currency beyond this physical body. What are we leaving behind, right? And now, after listening to the video, because I was so busy with so many things today, I had some real goals, right? So Monday is my day to get a chance to kind of map them out, strategize, figure out business, study, you know, the thing that my craft, right? And so in listening to this video, it filled me, because I set a big goal, big business goal for myself this year. And when I set that goal, it came up while I went in prayer. It came up in meditation. And I had to make this commitment that, all right, then let's go for it. Like, what do you have to lose? Like, when you have this goal set out for yourself, it's like, what do you have to lose? So if you have a goal of, I want to buy a house, if you have a business goal of you want to make a certain amount of money through your business, if you have a goal where you want to finish your degree, like, it doesn't happen at the moment that you say it, but you realize that there is a journey that you're about to go on to reach this goal. So just how beautiful energy works, and how beautiful Allah shows up when we decide to move towards something that is for our highest good. So this business goal that I had made for myself, because I had been working through my fears around money, my fears around because I've always been in a position to make enough, right? Enough to live, enough to make the bills, enough to entertain myself, enough to when a huge emergency comes up that I can see about it, because I've worked for myself and, you know, money had never been this thing where it challenged me, right? It was just like, okay, I'm pulled. I know that my needs will be met. And then when I made this decision around what I want my business to do or this next level, when we start to talk about wealth creation, this wealth creation and ideal of building legacy, there's another layer to the currency that you bring in. There's another layer to money that forces you to look at how you spend, that forces you to look at your behavior, your real relationship with money, right? Like, you can have a friendship with money that allows you to live comfortably, right? And you start to investigate the money stories in your mind, the money narratives that you have used and how you exchange with money. But we're now shifting into a very different mindset about money. And then you throw in investments and cryptocurrency and all of these different things. There was a time where, you know, buying a house was the move to make for legacy. That's not the biggest conversation anymore. It's a component, absolutely, but it has shifted to investment property, or it has shifted to, you know, having multiples or Airbnb, or it has shifted to investment, you know, via cryptocurrency and all of the changes digitally that's happening, right? And so it has started to be challenged. So it has made me sit back and be like, okay, what's going on here financially that I need to learn? Because the biggest thing that happens, one of my fears, is to make the income and lose it, to get to a space, to get to a place where it's like, my goal was here, I reach it, and then have to, you know, something happens that knocks me down to the starting point where it's like, okay, I got to do it again. And that this has been like an ongoing story I've heard from, you know, when you study individuals who are wealthy or have an abundance of money, right, that they always tell this story about they got caught up with this, or, you know, we heard, you know, my dad shared the story about Shaq, and he spent $1 million in one day. And then as a result of that, did he have to kind of shift his whole behavior around money? But that experience is what forced him to take a look at what his relationship is with money. So I take that on, like, this experience that I'm having with money is because I set a huge goal for myself. And my fears have been, at one point around taxes. I apologize if I'm fiddling with my earpiece, but it's just kind of slipping, so I'm trying to work it out. Anyway, taxes is one of my fears, right? And getting there and then losing it is another one of my fears, the inability to maintain it, right? And those are really, when I really think about it all together, those are really the only two that have stood out enough for me that forced me, even when I started my hair business, to delay getting a business license, because I was just like, taxes, oh my God, like, you know, pay me under the table, just hand to hand with the client. I don't want that drama. But then I recognized that keeping record of the finances that I'm bringing in is what allows me to qualify for things like property, or being able to, if I wanted to build and have a business loan at some point, then I would be able to show what my business is doing, because my business does well, right? And then it also holds me accountable to how I budget. How do I manage my money, right? So the thing about when we pray for a thing, it's not like, you know, we're in the season, right? We'll send out your Christmas list and then bam, you wake up and there's the bike, right? Doesn't work like that. It is so beautifully strategic in that you pray for a thing, and then there's something that forces you to look at where the scrapes are, what is the cut that needs mending in order for it to function whole, so that it can function properly, right? And so that, I know this is what that experience is for me. And so I'm like, okay, God, I'm in. Like, so that must mean it's coming because I'm paying attention to these things. So now in attracting the solution to this video he shares in talking about taxes, because what is the only thing that alleviates fear is knowledge. Knowledge. When you know a thing, it's not as oogie boogie as it might have been in your mind. You're creating this horror story based on what you don't know. But then when you do know, there's a way that you, okay, so now I know I need to be prepared for this and how I need to function with this. I need to make sure that I get the knowledge. I may need to have, you know, connect with some kind of white mentors to tell me what's the ins and outs on this tax thing, you know, and managing my money. How do I do this? So now you're in the mode of thinking about that. So I had that, right? Another thing that I came across with a client that I was working with is because I was sharing I have an accountability group, and we share out what our big goal is, and so we break down the big goal into smaller goals. And so I had mentioned that, you know, I'm ready to start to get myself in the mode of investing and things like that. And so I've been looking at a class that I want to take, and so I'm getting myself ready to save up to take the class. And then she goes, oh, are you talking about so-and-so? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh, yeah, I'm taking that class. That would be great. So right then, it was a sign for me that I would have a support system, somebody to do this with, one, and then two, that, yes, go in that direction. Continue walking in that direction. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to do that, right? And then as I'm going through my day, I had another moment. I signed up for a class. And in the midst of signing up for that class, she has suggested on her social media page, she said she suggested a book. And I was like, okay, I got some Audible. I'm going to get this book and start to listen to this book when I'm at the gym. And in this book, she just goes down the whole mindset of a millionaire. And just to clarify what the name of the book, I'll share out what the name of that book is, because it was just phenomenal. It's done by African American sister, and it's called "We Should All Be Millionaires." We should all be millionaires, and she talked specifically about this very video. Now, my dad didn't know nothing about me reading the book or anything like that, but it's like I'm getting all of the crumbs, you know, on the pathway towards this goal, and I can't help but, since I'm aware of looking for the. Let me just design so that, okay, am I supposed to be making these decisions and choices that I'm making? Let me know that I'm still supposed to be walking in this direction, or if I need to turn left at the stop sign, right? And Allah is showing me, nope, keep going that way. No, we good. You just have to do the work. You got to move, though. You can't just sit still and be like, okay, I'm waiting for this magical million-dollar check to show up at my front door, right? It's like, no, you have to move. And make the sacrifices and make the choices and create the disciplines that will allow you to get you closer to this goal, right? And so now that brings me to this idea of legacy. Legacy is so much bigger than the money, right? It is so very important to understand that legacy is character. Legacy is a gathering of goals, a gathering of mindset, a gathering of knowledge. That is the legacy, right? So we as Muslims, we have a legacy in our household of, you know, our children observe us praying in the household. Our children observe when we celebrate Ramadan. They observe how we celebrate those who have gone on Hajj. They observe how we are charitable. They observe when it's Eid time. That's legacy. We are giving them behaviors that support their spiritual life. We're showing them that this is the behavior of the best spiritual life. Now, I want to add a little caveat underneath that, right? Because I think it's important to say that the rituals of the thing without the spirit being a part of it, if you give in charity with this ho-hum, grumpy attitude, then you're pretty much killing the beauty and the power of what it means to be charitable. If you're giving for the sake of being able to control, you know, who into and tell them what to do and how to do it, you are pretty much damaging that, because your only task is to give, not to judge the give. That rest of that is between them and Allah, right? So we create this space that we are obedient to the behaviors and the rituals with the spirit of what Allah wants for us, with the spirit of, you know, Allah's will. We do the things, fisabilillah. It doesn't matter about the other individuals attached to it, though they will benefit from the light that we shine on ourselves as a result of us being prayerful, as a result of us being charitable, as a result of us embracing the Quran, as a result of us embracing the best character and moving with integrity. That is legacy, because if at any point the economic system shifts and now the wealth is not in paper dollars, but it's in crypto, okay, since we've been talking about it, that you are constantly in the mode of being able to move with knowledge, seeking knowledge from the cradle to the grave, keeping yourself in tune to when Allah is saying, yes, I want you to have the best experiences of this life, but you do it with integrity, right? So we look at, you know, that no legacy can be built from, you know, there's been this little reign of, you know, these flash mob robberies, right? With like huge groups of people just going and storming the mall, grabbing things and being out, right? And legacy can't be built from that type of character, that type of, that lack of integrity, this idea of faithless, you know, people who need, feel the need to steal or take from other people negate of faith. Like, faith is not there. There's nothing available because it was the only way that I'll get it is by my hands violently, right? And not using their hands in the most proper way to get what it is that they need in order to survive, right? And that there is always a way to that sign of when something is coming up for us that is challenging us, that is the time that we're supposed to squeeze ourselves to pull out the best of us, to get to the good parts of what we need to get to in order to create the best life for ourselves. And imagine if we pass on that mindset to our children, to our family, to the community, to the people that we work with, you know, as educators and as of the best form of dawah by being this idea of legacy as integrity, legacy as trust and honesty, right? That all of those things are the things that pour into us being able to generate the wealth that we want to generate, because Allah is going to forever bring us the tools in order to get the things that we want, right? Because at the front end of it, oh, okay, you're being obedient to what I'm calling you to. Okay, here, let me give you this other tool. Okay, you handled that well? Okay, good. Let me give you this next thing. And we keep moving in the direction towards all that is good, right? So this idea of, you know, facing the fears of success or the fears of wealth requires us to become more knowledgeable in the area. You want to be a millionaire, right? You want to make six figures. You want to understand the ins and outs. What are the things that block us, right? We have to learn and know and understand how to, how to negotiate your salary, right? Because so many, far too many times when we talk about the value of the dollar amongst Black women, that the value of the dollar is decreased because far too many times Black women don't feel that they're just happy to be in the building. So it's easy to be able to just like go in, and if they give you the job, we don't challenge the salary by saying, I want to negotiate my real worth, my real value. And that is what, that's the mindset that we have to move into. But we have to know that, okay, well, how do I do that? What education do I need to have in order to enter into that room confidently about what it is that I know and what it is that I'll bring to the corporation that I can negotiate, hey, I believe that my salary needs to be $20,000 more than what it is that you're offering, right? And being able to execute that ask in the right way. So that is what this space is. This space is to provide us with the knowledge necessary to build wealth. And in building that wealth will now lead over into an integral character and how we move with integrity and with the rules and the beautiful rituals of Alice Mom that allows us to live beyond this experience here, Earthside, that experience we are now providing a sense and way of living for those that come in contact with us. So I believe that we are at time, and I'm going to invite the email back in. Okay, good. You're not on a blog talk.
I got. Alhamdulillah. Thank you. More to be said, more will be said, as always. I'm going to push on because I want to give at least
sure.
a couple of
Absolutely.
points here. When I did did the introduction to the clip that we played, I took a little more time than I intended to. It was just, hey, just kind of got caught up, as we say. So I just want everybody to say, it ain't you. That's on me. But love you. Let me check out and take front stage. All right. Alhamdulillah. I need to share a screen scenario here. Yeah, so that, what am I trying to do? Okay. Yeah, the underlying theme of what I'm talking about today, what we're talking about today, is the tax system is a part of the caste system. It's really, really important to have that. And even as I say that, I want us to also understand, don't get caught up being lopsided about your attitude toward things. Because, yeah, I mean, just sitting here and just thinking about some things that I had to say, I came to a satisfying discovery that all those bad jokes about lawyers are for stupid people. Those bad jokes about lawyers are for stupid people. They want the stupid people lawyers. Yeah, jokes like what do you call a thousand lawyers at the bottom of the ocean? And somebody says a nice start. I think there's a Shakespeare line somewhere in my mind and my memory that Shakespeare has some in something that kill all the lawyers or something like that. But you know what? You have a good lawyer. Having a good lawyer is like having a pit bull. You know what I'm saying? It's like once somebody know you have a good lawyer, if they're worthy of the name, right? You're not a shyster or ambulance chaser. If they don't deserve those labels, that's it. But then even those, the very fact that they have a license, they can put, I'm going to say it this way, the fear of God in some people. And once they know you have a lawyer, because they know the law can go any old kind of way. And so it's like, it kind of give you some room to move. So that's very important. That's a big part of what we're talking about right now. But let me go ahead and play this clip here, and my conversation will continue in this direction here. How do I want to do it? Yes, let's do it. Yes. I was on a piece with my brother Imam Mikhail Sahir, Words Make People, this past Sunday, and it brought to my attention something that I wasn't, it wasn't on my radar as a focus, is this thing of critical race theory. So we had a wonderful time on the Sunday morning, and I have a lot of rich substance related to that. But let me go ahead and play this part. He sent me this from a CNN interview on the issue of critical race theory, and I'll have my comments following on after this. So just listen to this, take note, okay? I'm sorry, Blog Talk, you're not going to be able to let me see if I can.
So I talked to a lot of people. Yeah. We did not hear nothing about no critical race theory until he started bringing it up.
Critical race theory is a way to study systemic racism in the United States, and it's a term many people had never heard of until this year. But now it's central to the country's culture wars, and it's playing out here in rural Virginia.
I've witnessed Ren Williams take a national agenda, propaganda, bring it here to the small town, divide us.
A Democratic underdog, Bridget Craighead, lost to Republican Ren Williams in a state legislature race here in the Franklin County area in November. Williams, a lawyer who worked on Donald Trump's failed recount in Wisconsin last year, promised if elected he would introduce a bill to ban the teaching of critical race theory in schools in Virginia. Is teaching our children to hate America, even though the Virginia Department of Education says critical race theory isn't on the curriculum. But in politics, it's not so important whether critical race theory is a real issue or even what it means. What is critical race theory?
Mm-hmm. So effectively what it is you know, simply put, it's a lens, it's a way to look at the world through the lens of race.
If you stop there, that's pretty close to even what the founders of critical race theory would say. It's what comes next is what opponents of this aspiring politician say is where he is misguided.
And what's unfortunate about that or not productive about that is basically you are suggesting that because we're white that we are more better off and better able to do things. And then because you are not white, you are oppressed or you aren't looking for the future of success. You won't be able to overcome those things.
What the theory's founders have said is that it was originally an examination of how past laws based on race are still with us today in the legacy of inequality they were meant to enforce. But Republicans, by defining it on their own terms, have made it an effective battle cry.
You know, when we start off with these fresh, clean slate of children, we can effectively teach them you can be anything you want to be in this world. You have to work hard. You have to continue to try to get an education, and you will be successful. To say anything else or otherwise is just flat out wrong.
Well, maybe not wrong, but maybe describing the numbers nationally when it comes back to incarceration of men, when it comes back to poverty, black people have a tougher time.
I mean, would you say that same thing for Hispanics? I mean, would you say that same thing for poor whites?
Data provided to CNN by the...
So much for that clip. Yeah, I was just going to make a couple of comments and move on to other points. So you heard, you know, what he said. Let me take this out. And one of the key aspects that I want to mention here, I want to mention so that I don't forget. There's so much to be said about it. Remember this, brothers and sisters. So I think there are three things. There are three things. This is that pushing myself at this moment. There are three things that I think we need to lock in on with regard to like total transformation of the nature of our circumstance. I'm speaking of Bilalians right now, particularly, and Bilalian Muslims also in particular. One, it is a fact that law is interest in the form of legislation. Law is interest, meaning what am I interested in, what are you interested in? Law is interest in the form of legislation. So again, when people want to run us away from the polls, and I'm talking about people that consider themselves on our team. I'm not just talking about the people that are doing all that crazy, underhanded, devilish gerrymandering and all that. They're doing that for the very reason that I'm saying, because they know that law is interest in the form of legislation. And we have to know that when things are said like we are a nation of laws and not of men, we have to understand how, oh yeah, it sounds good, it sounds sweet, it sounds lofty. And yes, it's true, but who is it that is writing, and I have to add, enforcing the laws? Because when we talk about the IRS is the enforcement arm of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is not federal, and it's reserved for people other than us, if you really know. It's not a government agency. It's not audited. It's not controlled by, quote, unquote, the government in that regard. In fact, it's quite the reverse. But the IRS is the enforcement. They are the police of the Fed. You need to understand that. They took Wesley Snipes to the woodshed to say, to let all of, I mean, they did a you know, what's your name, you know, I got respect for my brother, but hey, is Kunta Kinte or is it Toby, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you broke the rules. Now, some white folks can do what you're talking about doing, and I know you heard it all. I'm talking as the personified slave master boss right now. It's like, yeah, you heard it from the people, and they right. They told you the truth, but you don't know what this is. Okay, so you want to step out? Okay, well, then we're just going to make an example out of you. Okay, yeah, do what they said. Yeah, what they said is right. There's nothing in the books. There's nothing in the law. There's nothing in you're right. They can get away. You can't. And let me tell the rest of them that might want to follow your example, this is what will happen to you. It's straight gangster. Yes, IRS straight gangster. And that is their role, law enforcement. Now, you can expand this to everything else. Law enforcement. And ma'am, I don't write the laws. I just enforce it. You got to talk to the mayor. You got to talk to the congressman. You got to talk to your senator. I don't write the laws. I just enforce them. So now if somebody is able to put their interest, this is what I'm interested in, and this is the law, if they're interested in having someone to be their legislator, then what they do, they put their money behind that legislator, and they become their constituency. The constituency of the legislator and the legislature is whoever put them in the seat. Who put them in the seat? Who put them in the seat? Whoever, the real people who put them in the seat, that's whose interest they are writing laws in. They're writing laws in their interest. So it's the interest. It's corporate interest, media interest, industrial interest, tech interest, whoever. It doesn't matter. White interest, whatever. That's now it's law, right? See, that's why I'm fighting so hard and doing such dastardly things in order to redraw the districts and do all that old kind of thing. To skew the voting potential in the favor of those legislators that they want to have, so they can have the laws written in their interest. Hey, and if you don't have legislation, so what I'm saying is that, listen, if we have some bona fide show enough people, I mean people who are real. I'm talking about Bilalians, Muslim, otherwise, and we are satisfied that their interest is our interest, or that they can carry or advance our interest. They've got this other interest. Then we got to put our money where our mouth is. We have to do that, right? But the game of politics, of course, you got to stay woke. I'll use that language right now. But the point is, when somebody seeks to convince you not to be involved in voting and accept, they're doing you, you're doing you a disservice. Because you can stay away from it and then don't do it, and then the person that you don't like is in the position, then what happened? Now the police work for them. I know about all the rest of it. George Floyd, you know, Black Lives Matter. Look, the point is, that's also why you need to have your own set of lawyers. You need to have your own legislators. And we do need Muslims and people of our, and find those who are, have our, who are in law enforcement, right? In law enforcement, I can count on my hand right now, right away, 5 Muslims, former students of Claire Muhammad School, who are in high position, assistant wardens of prison, today, right now, all right, from Claire Muhammad School in Oakland, and law enforcement all over, you know, the Bay Area, et cetera, and it's good. It's good, you know, that. So the point is that we need to, again, get that. So all that about law, right? So understand that. So law is interested in the form of legislation. So don't let people push you back about that. And that's what I'm saying. When people will say bad things about the police, they're going to say bad things about lawyers, they're going to say bad things about voting, you got to recognize that. They are. If you buy into that, in the wrong, you know, you can be skeptical, you can be critical, all that's good, but don't get so pushed away from, because all those things are still going to be at work, and they're going to affect your life. And then what you gonna do? What you gonna do when there's no? I'm glad we're doing shorter things. I'll tell you what went through my mind. I know y'all think something. Look, what you going to do when they come for you, right? Bad boy. You know, what you going to do, right? What you going to do? You don't have a legislator. You don't have law enforcement on your side, right? And you don't have access to any other kind of leverage or any other kind of power. So you wind up playing yourself, right? All right. So flip side of it, since I said this much on this end, we're gonna be doing some afterthoughts from this perspective, even though we are gonna go a little over right now. So let me go to formalize these 3 things that I'm saying. One is that we need to have more influence on the law, all right? That includes legislators, that includes lawyers, that includes law enforcement, right? So we need to have good relations and also generate our own in all 3 of those areas. I'm talking about, and not just to focus on Muslims, it's like Muslims, these are things that we have to do. And those who have demonstrated that they're good at that, then you need to make yourself available. You need to increase the awareness and the knowledge and the wherewithal that Muslims can embrace it in a sober, I'll just put it that way, in a sober way. Okay, so that's one side. All those things around the law, right? And obviously we need tax attorney, tax accountants, those people who have that kind of information as well. And we need to be thoroughly educated in that regard. So that's one side. Another thing, and this is not necessarily an order of importance, but the other thing, Muslims, while we're not going to be able to cover it all that I have in my mind, heart, and in notes to say, but the web of things that antagonize our aspirations, even especially as Bilalians, the game that's played, and that there are those the others that want to maintain. They don't want to change the game. They want to keep the game the same. And so whoever comes with, as with the case of the people talking about critical race theory, et cetera, without I'm not on a buy-in piece, but I do need to say this, that the main problem for those who are comfortable, what makes them uncomfortable is that those facts and that history seen through the lens of race as they have defined it, just the facts and figures change the master narrative, and it's the master narrative that gives the system its power. So you're messing with the very nature of the power of the system as it exists when you want to present facts that would change the narrative. And so that's why they have to ramp up these exercises that are going on now to keep the master narrative the same. And so this is why those of you with me on Wednesday, you hear me talk about the straw man. That's the whole approach of the guys that we play. That's the straw man concept. You just misrepresent the idea of your opponent and then attack your misrepresentation of the idea as your attack on the idea itself. And the stupid people who don't have the ability to think or don't have an interest in thinking about it in more rational, concrete, or intellectually fair ways, let's say, or intellectually reasonable ways. They don't want to be reasonable. They don't want to follow the logical inferences of this, that, if they want something that confirms their story. And so that's what the politicians will actually come and do, like this guy. And there are those who, at this deep-seated level, who are still tied to the value of the master narrative of old, they say, that's our guy, right? And that's our enemy. And that's the nature of that game. That's the nature of the game of politics right now. Okay, and when you understand that this is a part of the fabric of systems across the board, right? I'm going to go ahead and do four birds. Four birds for me, when I use it many times, especially circumstances like this, is like, it means just universally. Everywhere the game is rigged because it's grounded in this caste system. I take Isabella Wilkerson's representation of the caste system as perhaps the most complete, in-depth, clear representation. This is what it is. So you can call it systemic racism. You miss it when you call it systemic racism. There's truth there. Yes, it's racism in politics. It's racism in education. It's racism in business. It's racism in the culture. Right. Okay, fine. Okay, so what's the deal? So what are you going to do? Right? No. When you understand that it's a caste system, and as such, race, when you go systemic racism, you get the feeling that you think you can reasonably make a transformation. Oh, it can be changed if we just get people to understand that we're all the same. Okay. It's like, how's that working, right? It's like, oh, wait, bro, you're a Muslim. Yeah, I'm Muslim. And here's where I'm saying that we're supposed to go, that God tells us where to go when the system that is enslaving you is oppressing you. You're supposed to make hijra. You're supposed to make exodus. You're supposed to get out of there, and I'm putting it this way, get the hell out of there, right? Because that's the hell. Get the hell out of there. So one way of trying to get the hell out of there, you keep teaching people, you know, teach them what jadilhum billati hiya ahad. Argue with them in ways that are best. Allahu Akbar. That's wonderful. That's fine. But don't forget the other side. وَلْتَكُمْ مِنْكُمْ عُمَّةٍ يَدْعُونَ إِلَى الْخَيْرَ. Get your own stuff, I'll put it that way. But I need to put a little more force on it, but I'd have to use words that are not usual for us. But you got to get your own, huh? Somebody told us that, and they were right when they were telling us that. You have to get, and that's what God is telling us. When he said, well, tekum minkum umatin yad'una ilal khayr, saying build your own system. Build your own system. Build your own economy. Build your own schools. build your own political agenda and groom your own candidates and unite with them upon, even if it's a hypocritical facade, then I'm not yours, the one that you're fighting against. You're fighting us to do what? Get the hell out of there. If there's hell in there, get it out of there. But you have to become a united force, huh? Buni and Marsus, right? And on your quote-unquote American unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, hypocritical or otherwise, it is written. And we are a nation of laws and not of men. Is that not the law? Then you got to be willing to do what you got to do to get yours here, because this is the only place in the world as of now where you really still have that opportunity. But see, another part of their skill is dulling your sense of empowerment and worth and capability and really cohesiveness, right? You know, it's like whatever the idea of coming together and being unified and being cohesive and et cetera, they feed the people down on the mud seal of the caste system. They feed them, get your own stuff. And they feed envy, jealousy, opposition, hatred, et cetera, dichotomy, splitting us up, right? It is from that fable of, y'all know that fable. What is that fable? Plantation owner, dude, that's enough. Y'all know what I'm talking about. It's not true, but it's a parable that this slave master created a system that divide you up, you know, the light against the dark, the young against the old, the blah, 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 blah. Just can't think of what the name is. Y'all think about what I'm talking about. We're going to have to check out. Alhamdulillah, so much more to be said. But inshallah, Allah give us another week we have to do it. Let me say this. I'll jump ahead of myself and mention this. Brother and sister, did I cover the three things? Okay, one, law. So everything around law, lawyers, law enforcement, legislators, we need to be stronger in those areas, right? The other one, build ummah. That's build ummah. And to build ummah, you have to be real Muslims. We have to be real Muslims. Don't get dressed up. It's not a costume party. Got to really be Muslim or it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You got to be real Muslim. That's the other thing. And the other thing is you better get with this crypto. You know, I'm saying it's in a jokey kind of rhetorical rhythm. But see, like the woman believed that the tax system was supposed to be that place where you won't get discriminated against because everything, you know, all money is greed, blah, blah, blah. And then she got in there, she got woke up to the fact that, oh, man, and the tax system too? And then they don't report about that at all? It's like, and then she had to go investigate, dig it up, find it, and present the information. System hasn't changed at all, but she's informed you. The anonymity of crypto. And I'm not talking about anonymity like Silk Road kind of thing. Get off of that. You know, I'm not with that. But it's like when you buy that Bitcoin, it's not white, black. Who is it? This is black man. Look, what's his zip code? This is black guy. And all these other things, all these metaverses, NFTs, and all the thousands of crypto that are going up thousands of percent. Don't even trip with Bitcoin going down. Just don't even worry about it. Look, it's 50 grand right now, and it's been moving by the thousand. It's because it's December. People are making people with high net worth, they're making the financial moves they need to make with the amount of money that they have made from crypto. They need to do it before January 1. In order to get the tax benefits or avoid the tax harm. that would come to them. That's how they're playing the game. And so you see it, this also becomes a way where, shoot, this is time for you to get a little more. You talk about Black Friday. Don't be looking for a flat screen TV. You need to look for you some flat crypto. I'm saying what I mean. This is this is not financial advice. I'm just saying. I'm not a financial advisor. All of that. All right. Let me get out of here before I get myself in more trouble. All right, my dear. We're about to check out of this burg, as they say. Hold on. Let me get this. Let me mute it properly. Amila, what you got to say for yourself before we get out of here?
You know, I think that it's important that, you know, spaces like this is to inspire the conversation, is to inspire, to set the spark for the student and everyone that's here to move in the direction so that they can find what their particular space is in this wealth creation. Because it, regardless of what your gift is, it is to create this wealth in order to invest. We have to put ourselves in a position to be able to invest. And that could be by building business. It could be by finding other businesses or the way that you treat the money that you have earned and created through your job. Like investing, we have to know wealth has been created without investing. It just does not happen. Just save it and wait for it. Doesn't work that way. We have to invest.
That's right. That's right. All right, y'all. Thank you for spending some time with us. Alhamdulillah, inshallah, life goes on. Hey, get serious, sir. I'm going to make up a word. Get serious, sir, about whatever it is that you're doing. I know you feel like you're serious, but I'm telling you, get serious, sir, because that's what's up. That's right. Look, man, listen. We don't hear. I mean, I don't like to mention Donald Trump much now because surprise for surprise, there's a lot of Muslims who rock with Trump. I mean, mashallah, some I have yet to put under the microscope. I get it. Yeah, I get it. So I have to avoid going into another tangent there. Nevertheless, whether you like Trump or not, let's put it this way. You need to recognize that he's the icon of the existing master narrative that is crumbling, right? That is crumbling.
Yeah.
And that's the threat that they're trying to shore up. It's a threat to some, but it's a blessed opportunity to others. And the point is, the very fact that you don't hear him so much gives him opportunity to do his stuff in private. So now you don't know who I'm talking to. You don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what I'm saying. You don't know what level my mind is on right now, and you don't know who's rocking with me. And so by the time you see him again, it's like, here's Johnny, you know. So, mashallah, we got to go. May Allah have mercy on us. I started thinking about The Shining and Jack Nicholson and all the rest of that. This sounds like a horror story. Maybe it is. Allahu alam.
Right.
All right, y'all. We out of here. God's peace be on you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.